Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. On this episode, in the red corner, it's time to get head-stabby as Gerard Butler stabs a lot of bad guys in the head while saving the White House, the President, and the whole of the United States of America from some Korean bad guys whose plan it is to, well, meh. There's a cool bit where a plane strafes Washington from 2013. It's Olympus Has Fallen.
Mr. President, 5 minutes, sir. Evening, ma'am.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
Mustang, this is Big Top, bringing out the full package.
Everybody knows you did the right thing on that bridge. Even the president knows. You gotta learn how to get back into the real world.
Mr. President, we're ready for you.
Our guests have arrived.
I'd like to welcome you to the White House, sir.
While in the blue corner, Channing Tatum dons the requisite white vest as he has to save the big house from some homegrown terrorists whose planet is to, well, nah. I mean, James Woods wants to blow up the Middle East and the rest seem cool with that. It lost the race into cinemas by 4 months from 2013. It's White House Down.
John Cale. Why do you want to be in the Secret Service?
I can't think of a more important job than protecting the president.
In college, you barely maintained a C average.
Did you get the job?
Yeah, I think I got a shot.
You know how it is. They gotta go talk amongst themselves.
Just tuning in, we are going to breaking news out of Washington.
This is John Cale. I'm in the White House.
They've taken the building and they're holding hostages,
including my daughter.
Alpha One, do you have the target? Roger that. We're holding the president in the library.
That's a library. Don't go in there. This is so stupid.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. Newsflash, asshole. I don't work for you. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
And welcome to this week's War for the White House. As Olympus Has Fallen takes on White House Down. Yes, as America goes to the polls, we're having our own battle to see who belongs in America's seat of power. The clue I gave you to guess this pairing on last week's show was Fallen Down. Fallen Down. Quite a difficult one. Quite a difficult one. Mm. It wasn't easy.
Fallen down.
A few guesses for falling down.
Yeah, understandably.
Do you want to explain what fallen down is?
Yeah. Shall I? Well, fallen down is White House down and Olympus has fallen. Mm. Those two words put together, and then the curveball of it sounding a little bit like falling down. Thankfully, you were there to pick up my considerable slack.
Yeah, my clue was the wrong guy in the wrong house at the wrong time. Do you know where that clue comes from, Vicky?
Your brain.
But from a film.
Yeah.
Because I know Alex has got it. Do you want to explain it, Alex?
I knew it. It is, and I hope I'm right, a quote from Major Grant in Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Oh, okay.
He says it to Bruce Willis in that movie. And obviously these movies are Die Hard.
In the White House.
Yes. He says you're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm.
So I replaced place with house.
Mm. Yeah, I know.
Paraphrasing. Very good.
So did we have any correct guesses?
Right, well, it's been a while since we've done guesses on Twitter because of pre-records and all the rest of it. So, yeah, we have. If you haven't joined us on Twitter yet, please do. We are at ClashPod. It's a fun place to come and hang out. And big news this week, Chris. We crossed the what mark?
1,000 followers.
What?
That is amazing. It is amazing.
We blasted past it.
We're on 1,020 now.
I was very, very proud and grateful.
So, here are a few guesses. Sophie Hart, hello Sophie, guessed The Shining versus Get Out, in brackets, please. Sorry to disappoint. Gemma Page says The Fugitive versus Shawshank Redemption, which definitely works with the wrong guy in the wrong house at the wrong time. Both movies starting exactly that way, as they do. We also have from Dylan Berry, The Collector versus Don't Breathe, which is, on paper, a great pairing. Personally, for me, I like one of those movies, and it's called Don't Breathe, and I never want to watch The Collector again. Have you seen The Collector?
The Collector. There's like three Collectors now, isn't there?
Oh, did it start a franchise?
I thought it was all right.
I remember being quite bored. It's just torture porn. It's a guy who collects body parts, isn't it, in a house, and like people go in, and then he sets traps for them, and they get chopped up.
Oh, I can't remember anything about it.
Right.
But I thought it was all right.
All the best films. They're just straight out after you've watched them. It's proof of a good film. But the winner and our only correct answer, and not only our only correct answer, the first answer in. Congratulations, Frank B. You get our vote. And what does it mean if only one person gets the right answer, Chris?
I'm doing my job.
Yep. Means the clues are good clues.
Clues are good clues.
They walk that line between being too easy and too hard.
Yep. You really needed both clues this week.
Did. Is that a way of saying mine was shit? Because you can just say it. I know it was a bit shit, but I thought it was great at the time. Hindsight's 2020. Right. What I imagine is going to be quite a long section this week. Connections between these two movies.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think we should do too many of these because obviously they are the same film twice, aren't they?
I'm going to do all of them.
I've got one. Let me just get, because I didn't go through, because what a waste of time. Ready? Sporty Poultice. Spotus. Yeah?
Oh, that's good.
That's good, isn't it? Because
nice.
Aaron Eckhart boxes for some reason. Mm. And Jamie Foxx has nice trainers.
That's right. Yeah.
It would be better if the acronym wasn't SPOTUS.
Why would that work? Sporty President of the United States.
I get it. It sounds like a medical condition. I've got SPOTUS.
Well, they both feature idealistic presidents very similar to Donald Trump.
True.
The other guy, Obama. Both films where most of the characters find out what's happening on the news over and over again. The news telling us what we've just seen so other characters can find out about what we've just seen.
Oh, I've got a good one. The reading out of passcodes down telephones.
Oh, John. I cannot wait till we get to that bit. Shift F3! What? Mum?
Hashtag joke.
The American flag getting fucked.
Yeah, that's standard, isn't it? Have they both got special watches in, or did I just misremember?
Yep. I've got that. Antique watches given by first ladies as gifts to their president husbands.
Okay.
The villain lying about his intentions. Mm. Both times there's a switcheroo.
Mm.
Kids who know a lot about the White House and like to tell people.
White House ornaments used as weapons.
Yep. Mentions of the White House being burnt down by the British in 1814.
I didn't even know we'd done that.
No, I didn't. I had to Google that. Yep. I feel quite proud.
Yeah. No, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean to say yes. I meant I learned something as well.
And who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it watching Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down was going to be an interesting learning experience. What else have we got? The Speaker of the House being sworn in as president.
Yep.
happens in both. Aircraft releasing chaff to avoid missiles.
Yes.
I mean, I've got a lot more. Terrible CGI. Really
yep.
bad.
Yep. Yep. Well, neither of these Washington films were shot in Washington.
Which I understand, because you couldn't do what they do in Washington, no. in Washington. But some of it is, I mean, well, we'll get onto it. Olympus has fallen. Wow. The presidential limo ending up underwater.
I don't remember that in the first
in
one.
In the swimming pool in White House Down, and it goes over and goes through the ice off the bridge.
Oh yeah.
Olympus has fallen. Yeah. And finally, shall we end this?
Yeah, yes. please.
All right, then. Men who want to be on or back on the President's Secret Service detail, which gives me my connection, the shit you have to do to get the job you want.
Good. Some of those have spoilt my intro, but that's fine.
Excellent. I aim to please. So, I gave Chris Olympus Has Fallen. I gave Vicky White House Down. As I said, in the UK, 4 months separated these movies. Olympus was April. White House Down was November. We do it chronologically. So, Chris, take us on a journey.
When terrorists take over the White House, the government is powerless, and it's left to a brave maverick who doesn't play by the rules to save the president.
Mr. President.
Yes.
It's a critical message. The White House is under crowd attack.
This hunk is on his own inside the building and starts taking out villains one by one.
Hey! Hey! Hey, get the fuck down!
Though he's slowed down by bad decisions made by those on the outside, as well as his own efforts to find a child with encyclopedic knowledge of the White House. But our hero manages to save the kid, rescue the president, kill the mastermind, and stop the baddies becoming a rogue nuclear power. The film ending with him landing a job as security for the commander-in-chief.
Give me the Pentagon on the line now.
Olympus has fallen. Olympus has fallen.
You attempt to retake this building, and I will execute
your commander-in-chief.
Oh my God.
We have contact from inside the White House.
Identify yourself.
309er.
Jesus, Banning?
Is this the same guy that was removed from the president's detail?
He is ex-Special Forces.
40 commandos breached the gate, 20 enter left.
Can we trust him?
With all due respect, I'm the best hope you've got.
And Vicky, if you want that intro for Thursday's show, I can send it to you.
No joke, I've written nothing. So I'm just going to throw it back.
I can do that again. Yeah. So yeah, that is the synopsis for both films.
It is weird. Like, I couldn't find anything. There was nothing about how the White House Down. The similarities are more. I guess what I'm saying, the similarities are more than just like. Uncanny. It's genuinely, there's too many for it to be an accident.
Yes, and one was definitely written before the other. We'll get onto that. But yeah, there's not a lot of background because these aren't the kind of films as well that people write a lot about, that make documentaries about.
No.
So there's not a lot of information, but I'll go first in terms of my history. I watched both these films in 2013 at preview screenings. They were the kind of films that IGN covered. So watched both of them, very different press screenings to be in. The reaction was very different. My personal reaction was very different. I'm not going to go into what that is yet. But yeah, that's all I've got to really say about what I thought of those films at the time.
That's so weird because that's my intro to what I see, my experience of these movies.
Yeah.
Just swap out IGN for Sky and that is exactly my experience of watching these movies. Preview screenings. I will add though, I remember watching Olympus Has Fallen at preview screening and genuinely not liking it at all. Now, I know we're not meant to do opinion at this part of the show.
It's all right.
But walking into it this time, having had that bar lowered so considerably by my first viewing, enjoyed it a lot more second time round.
Interesting. Vicky, was this first time watch? So, have you seen these before?
Yeah, because in 2013, they just cancelled each other out for me. So sure. I was like, okay, I can't engage with that. And then we kind of owe them this beautiful podcast that we do because, as you said, one of you, like, it's like proof of concept. Like, this is... There's a lot of articles on the internet about this versus this. Mm. And I'm not saying we stole the idea, but maybe there was some inspiration. So the point being...
Twin films, I think, is what they call it.
Yeah. So it was either this or Volcano versus Dante's Peak.
Coming up next week, obviously.
No, people have asked for that, though. And obviously we did Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Yeah.
So, we don't want to do them every week, those twin films, because A, there aren't that many, and B, sometimes they're not that interesting. But
this is the thing. I then held off from watching them because I knew they were on our list. And they're not the sort of things I want to watch many times, I don't think. But my kind of thing, you know how much I love Channing Tatum, and I do like a daft action film. So I went in with very high expectations of one and not so much of the other, and then it was reversed.
Oh, interesting.
I had people over at the weekend for 2 days, and I had to watch both these movies on the Monday because no one would watch them with me. I was literally like, they're for work, though, so if we could, people... I ended up watching Your Next and The Guest.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Both of which were fucking awesome.
Yeah, good films. Georgina watched in. My missus watched in at the start. Walked in at the start of Olympus Has Fallen, only just to say something to me, and she ended up sitting down and continuing to watch it because
it's so gripping.
The opening does grab you.
It does.
But so in terms of background, there isn't a lot. Alex, I will tell this screenwriting story, even though it might be boring.
I said the only thing I could find was this boring legal case.
But I mean, it does tell you a little bit about when these films were written, and maybe if one was stealing from the other one, it was definitely in one direction. I love this name, Creighton Rothenberger.
I know, it's amazing.
Old money right there.
Creighton Rothenberger and Catherine Benedict are credited with writing the screenplay of Olympus Has Fallen. But this saga started in 2002 when Creighton Rothenberger and someone else, John Green, discussed writing a movie about terrorists taking over the White House. And apparently they even travelled to Washington, D.C. To walk around the perimeter of the building and to start working on a treatment. Green claims he called it Olympus Has Fallen. A 41-page treatment was registered with the WGA. They finished it the following year, but it didn't sell. Cut to 2011, Rothenberger got a new manager and agency. And then in 2012, the screenplay sold to Millennium Films. But Rothenberger failed to disclose that Green had been a co-writer.
Shady.
So Green...
I mean, leaving a paper trail, though. I'm going to register this with you, Mr. Green, with the WGA, and then I'm just going to ignore that.
I think their argument was that he'd completely changed it, transformed it. This new version had nothing to do with what Green had written. But Green sought a declaration of copyright co-ownership, breach of partnership agreement, and he just wanted a lot of money. The case was settled and there was a confidentiality agreement. So there weren't any stories following up on what happened. But then a divorce settlement a few years later, it came up in.
Oh, wow.
And it sounds like Green was paid $175,000 for his involvement in Olympus Has Fallen.
That's all right, isn't it?
I think that's all right. Yeah.
Not bad for a day out at the White House, no?
And not as boring a story as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So obviously White House Down was being shot at much the same time as this, and sure, we'll talk about those circumstances on Thursday's show. But what it did mean was that Olympus's release date was moved from midsummer to March to avoid the summer release of White House Down. They wanted to get their film out first.
Yep.
They were frightened. There was probably, I'd say, more star power in the other film.
Agreed.
Therefore, let's get this one out.
Yep.
And so...
Do you know where they save time? The fucking CGI.
<That's right.
laughs> It's got to be out in March. The flag looks like it's from a video game. It'll do. I bet that was said a lot in the VFX studio for this movie. It'll do. It'll do.
So let's talk about the movie then. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to use real names rather than character names because it's just going to get too confusing over the course
no
of these two.
I have no idea what anyone's called. You could say the president and then I would know.
I just thought it was going to get too confusing over two podcasts. So
Mike Banning has three movies now.
I know.
He's got three movies. You can't not call him Mike Banning.
Banning's the only name I could remember off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
So we start in a pretty impressive prologue, I think. It's at Camp David. The cool, tough President Eckhart is boxing with the likable, tough Agent Butler, who is a maverick. He's ex-Special Forces. He was in the Ranger Battalion. He's the kind of guy who moves mountains or dies trying. He knows how to extract information for people. We also come to learn that he tortures and kills unarmed prisoners, but that's coming a bit later.
It was a different time.
he's also the kind of guy that would tell the Speaker of the House, played by Morgan Freeman, to go fuck himself. So we meet him. We meet Dylan McDermott, looking shady.
Do you know how you know already at this point that Dylan McDermott is going to be a bad guy?
He's in a shadow when he appears. He emerges from the shadows. Isn't he twirling a moustache?
It's the fact that Gerard Butler feels the need to go, leave the babysitter alone, which makes him sound really predatory.
Yeah, but that's meant as that, isn't it?
I think so.
Don't touch the babysitter.
Yeah, because you know he's a wrong'un from that point going forward.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, this start is where the movie first asks you to suspend your disbelief, because even when they're boxing and the president's man comes in and goes, Mr. President, 10 minutes. Looking at the amount of sweat on him, there is no way you can shower and end up in a black tie suit and ready to go to a fundraiser in 10 minutes. So he has skipped something there, and I think it's the shower.
No.
I think he's sweating in that black tie suit.
Don't you think it's cute that they're like, look, okay, Gerard Butler, you have got to be like not afraid to stand up to the president, even though that's an HR nightmare, that because that's your boss that you're being paid to hit. But also, he can tell you which earrings to wear with your frock. So he's got everything.
He's got two faces.
It's the weird old man line as well. Aaron Eckhart does not look like an old man standing next to Gerard Butler.
Not at all.
In fact, he looks a little bit younger than Gerard Butler. he looks like he hasn't lived quite as much as Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
And then he's actually only two years older than Gerard Butler. And he's like, hey, I'm an old man. You're like, that doesn't work. Change that line because you don't look like an old man.
So then the package, okay, the president is on the move, and we get this action scene, the president's motorcade, there's an explosion, one car goes off the bridge, the president's car is halfway off the bridge, the president's wife's in the car, she can't get a seatbelt open. Does he have a choice? Agent Butler, does he not have a choice? He's trying to get the president out, he's trying to save the wife, but he can't save the wife, so he grabs the president, and then the wife goes.
Unbelievable. Right. Literally
dives.
Unbelievable. Literally fridge the wife in the first 10 minutes.
Ashley Judd is dead.
It's just so unfair.
Yeah.
And that poor kid, Mommy! And then it's like, Gerard Butler, actually, you are shit at your job. Because when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, it must have been a terrorist event that would push them off the bridge. It's just ice. And you were driving too fast, or someone was driving too fast.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, was it just ice?
Yes.
I thought it was some explosion.
No, I think something hits the windscreen of the lead car.
Snow.
And that's really hard snow. Yeah. Shatters the
Hail
lead
snow,
car's windscreen.
Whatever.
But you're right. This accident, I don't know if it's Gerard Butler, but it is someone's fault. Someone should have looked outside and gone, probably don't drive in this.
Yeah.
Like, because someone actually goes, it's really coming down. You're like, you're not kidding. It's a fucking blizzard.
Yeah, and you're only going to a fundraiser.
Don't
you can cancel.
Drive. No. And also, the kicker in this scene is the fact that after the wife has ended up, and also we find out that, president's limousines are like really, really tough things.
The beast, they call them.
Yeah. It goes over and through the ice. No one goes, well, we should just check. We should probably check because they might be in
Why
there
bother?
Alive.
Why bother?
it's like, that's done.
That's such a good point.
The kid shouted, Mom! So if we find her now, he's wasted that. Mom!
Yeah, and they've got this, they've got to get to this engagement.
That's true.
He's put his suit on and everything.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that the final shot of that opening is a helicopter flying over. And it's almost like, it's like rubbing salt in the wound, like someone going, probably should have taken that.
Could have gotten that.
Could it, if you'd flown in that, less dead first ladies.
And yet I think it's a very effective opening.
No, I don't. Sorry, I don't. He doesn't learn anything. He gets fired. So what?
I do. I think it's weird that it's turned into the president not wanting Mike Banning around. I think it should be Mike Banning who's so broken after thinking he's failed his job that he's the one who steps back and then finds this inner strength to come back for the rest of the movie.
It has to have been him being so cocky about this that put them in danger in the first place. And then he can learn to be whatever.
Yeah.
That's so obvious.
Do you want to know, there's a line in it where he goes, Mustang, this is Big Top, bringing out the full package. I was like, do Secret Service people really speak like that? And
they
probably
do, yeah.
Do you want to know some of the Secret Service names for past presidents of the USA?
Oh, I think I know some of them. Go on.
Because they get to pick their own.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they get provided a list and they pick something
I was like,
that they
I'm
like.
A big dick. Or, no.
Mustang, this is Big Top. Big Dick is coming out.
Wow. The president. Well,
the package isn't far off.
but Gerard Butler said that before. Bringing out the full package. All right. Ronald Reagan went with Rawhide.
Makes sense.
Cowboy. Barack Obama was Renegade.
Really?
Yeah.
And he picked that himself.
He picked Renegade himself.
That makes me not like him as much. That's a shame.
Does it?
Yeah.
I quite like it. Given a list, I'm like, fucking Renegade. Sound like a badass.
It's because he got that song back once again with the Renegade Master.
Yeah, and I suppose you can't have anything like the Avengers have already done. So your list is really small. Captain America, we can't.
Donald Trump has gone with Mogul.
Has he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my favourite was George W. Bush. And he's the only one where it says this. It was Tumblr to begin with. And then it goes, later, Trailblazer. And you wonder how many gaffes in before he went, we should change the Tumblr thing. I want to be Trailblazer now.
Right, we're into the next section of the film, which I'm calling White House Down. So it's 18 months later, and because, as Alex said, the president can't bear to look at Gerard Butler for what he represents and what he reminds him of, Butler is now working at the Treasury. He's doing a desk job that's killing him. Mm. And we meet some of the other characters. Secret Service Director is Angela Bassett.
Sorry, can I just flag? And how do we know what job they do? Because a fucking caption comes up on the screen and goes, whatever, whatever. And at first I was like, you can't, don't just do that to Angela Bassett. So then when they do it to everyone else, that's fine. But it makes no sense to me because this is not a film that is unafraid of expositional dialogue. Mm. So why can't she just walk in and he goes, oh, hello, Angela Bassett, head of the Secret Service, or whatever. Why do you have to have a caption?
It's funny you say that. The next section of my write-up is entitled Exposition Dump.
Mm. But it's I think they're going, in all honesty, I think they're going for the 24 vibe. They're trying to make it all like, it happens in a day, so we've gone for 24, like 24. There is one problem with this introduction to Gerard Butler, which is he seems to be asking the question in the first scene we see when he's in the kitchen talking with his wife, how many things is too many things to hang off your belt? Because I'd argue between the keys, the pager, his radio, his gun, it's a fact. Six things is too many things to hang off a belt.
Do you have weak hips? Can you not do that?
I just think you look
you a little
bit...
You'll be able to
sit down. It's like, but I know they're not cool. Buy a fanny pack. Put your gun in a fanny pack and then
we call them bum bags, thank you. We're not in America now.
Yeah.
But the movie's set in America. So I was in the moment, in the zone. I was living it through Gerard's eyes.
But in terms of cast, I was just saying Angela Bassett, Secret Service Director, Morgan Freeman, Speaker of the House, Robert Forster, Army Chief of Staff, Melissa Leo, Secretary of Defense, and Dylan McDermott is now in the private sector.
Mm. Not a bad cast. Not a bad cast.
Yes, some used more effectively than others, I would say, from that group I just read out, and we'll get onto that. But the airspace quickly becomes compromised. Even though the White House isn't exactly on the coast, I'm not sure how that Korean plane got so close to the White House to be able to do the damage that it does.
Yeah, good point.
But yes, the
genuinely, it's ridiculous. I mean, I know the movie is meant to go, we're just going to do what we want, but how close can an unregistered military aircraft get to the White House before anyone tries to stop it? They are over the Washington Monument when those jets turn up and go, by the way, this is restricted airspace.
Excuse me, mate. Excuse us, mate.
What are you doing? Do that at sea. Don't do it over the Washington Monument.
So the planes arrive while the South Korean delegation is visiting the White House. They do that thing that I do love in films when all the Secret Service agents grab the president and treat him like a rag doll.
This was so brilliantly, directed, because prior to this, there was fucking music all over this. And ostensibly, the Koreans are here for a diplomatic visit. It's like, dun, 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 dun. It's a diplomatic visit. Dun, dun, dun. And then there's the planes. You're like, okay, obviously it's going to happen. And then the guys come into the room. The music stops. And he's mid-conversation with the South Korean president, Aaron Eckhart is. And they're like, excuse me, sir, we've got to go. And my heart honestly jumps because it's like, from all of that to silence and boring diplomacy, and then it is on and off they go. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, and you mentioned 24. They did do it a lot on 24, but I did always like it. As soon as the most powerful man in the world is being treated like a rag doll, I find that very watchable.
You know shit's going on. it's a trope, but it's a great trope.
Yeah.
The president insists on bringing the Korean party with him. That's not protocol, sir.
No.
He's coming with us.
Yep.
And the whole plan is predicated on the president making that decision.
It's really good
that he does make that mistake.
Hey, do you want a mini quiz about, because we see the Washington Monument get destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Do you want a mini quiz about the Washington Monument? It was once the tallest structure in the world.
Wow.
Did you know that between 1884 and 1889, what do you think beat it?
The Eiffel Tower.
Correct. Well done, Vicky wins a quiz there. I'll just make a little... I know you're a fan of me scoring quizzes, Chris, so there you go. Vicky won, you
can you just
zero.
Just do make sure you add it to the tally, though, because it is important.
You've got to set the microphone.
No, because it's a private thing.
Okay.
I don't want him to know.
So they head 120 feet down to the underground bunker, while above ground there's this spectacular scene of destruction. We've got the Washington Monument crumbling. Mm-hmm. We've got Korean soldiers or terrorists attacking from the ground on the lawn of the White House. We know they're bad because they shoot a dog.
Bastards.
And then in the bunker, the Koreans take that over in seconds. It does make me wonder, don't they do any background checks
or
on any of the people visiting the White House?
Do they never run scenarios? In both films, someone's like, and what's your decision? And what do you do? And they're like, and it's like, have you not done Oh, hang on, I've got a joke. Have you not done any training? A training day.
Antoine Fuqua.
You're welcome.
I haven't mentioned him. Sorry, Antoine Fuqua is the director.
Can we take a moment for me to actually call both of you out on being wrong in this instance?
Okay.
So in terms of background checks, there is a statement made about just how deep Kang, the villain, goes and how they never thought to check the South Korean government. So they do reference
that. What about everyone else on his team?
Yeah.
All right. And what was your point?
Do they not do scenario planning in
right.
the White House?
And Kang himself actually says the line, it takes your military 15 minutes to arrive at the White House, which is why we did it in 13 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So they do actually reference both those points, and then Mrs. Fallen wins. I'll keep a score. Let me write down.
I was more right than Vicky there. But it's absolute carnage. Although the scene does go on for quite a long time, I felt like they dragged it out.
It's
Mr. Fuqua.
Fantastic. When the plane releases all the chaff,
yeah, that's awesome.
And the missile hits it, I was like, he's a great action director.
We see the South Korean president get executed on screen, and the Stars and Stripes, as we said, is shot up, taken down, thrown over the side of the White House.
It's so embarrassing.
Emotional scenes. That did get some laughs, I remember, in the screening.
Because of how bad it looks. It's like, buy a flag. They have a lot of them in America. They genuinely do. They are a fan of their flag. Just buy one.
I never thought
Chuck
that.
It off something. What is that meant to be?
Why do you think they didn't?
I don't...
We just can't get a real flag to do what we want it to do.
We want it to go in slow motion. Film a real flag in slow motion.
Just drop it from a great height. Can't.
And we're going to take a break.
Wrestle Me is a show where two men watch every WrestleMania from 1 to 37, unpicking the multicoloured threads that tie it all together.
I think it's slightly something to do with the fact that Americans don't really like cell phones, do they?
Right.
I think they've all got basic ones, basically.
That's a big shout.
It is a big shout, but I mean, there is something funny about it, like text messaging never took off in the States.
What? Come on now.
Never been big.
Whether you're a lapsed fan or someone who doesn't give a flying laureate about it, there's something for everyone.
If you can get a crowd to boo you for kicking a fabulous ladder.
Fabulous ladder.
And the crowd are booing.
Yeah. Get off that lovely ladder we've just learned about.
It's a beautiful polysexual ladder.
It's a beautiful homemade shabby chic creation.
If you climb up to it, ecstasy can be found at the top.
Listen via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods.
Wrestle Me is a Stakhanov production.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back with a section I'm calling Exposition Dump. So we learn a lot in the next half hour in the film. Kang is one of the most wanted terrorists in the world. He was brought across the DMZ when he was 12 after his father was executed for crimes against North Korea's state. While crossing the border, his mother was killed by an American landmine. So it's personal and political for Kang, what he's doing. He's played by Ricky Yoon, who people know from, is it Die Another Day?
It is.
Where he's got the diamonds in his face. He's cool. He looks cool. He's no Alan Rickman, though. And
it's true. You have to compare. In all these diehard ripoffs, you go, but are they as good as Alan Rickman? 100%. And the answer throughout history is no.
It's always going to be no. He claims to have no interest in nuclear launch codes. This isn't true. He claims to not be from the North or the South. He's just there for justice. He's there to give millions of starving men, women and children a chance of more than just subsistence, to end the civil war your country interrupted so long ago. And yes, for united, prosperous Korea.
Yeah, this is a problem for me because this is 40 minutes in and you've had your big start, the big explosion, the audacious attack on Washington, D.C., and at this point, you are sort of going, I want to know what the plan is. I want to find out what they're really doing here. It's like in Die Hard, it's like Alan Rickman going, we're actually here for the money. And here, it's just, I know it's sort of a double cross. He's bluffing. But at the same time, it's sort of so wishy-washy that I'm like, what? I'm left going, what is he doing? He wants to unite what? He wants to he wants a ship, some ships to go over there instead of being there. What?
Well, he wants to recall the 7th Fleet from the Sea of Japan and recall all American troops in the demilitarized zone.
Yeah.
And if you deviate, you'll start executing hostages. But it's this kind of arrogant thing where the implication is that if the American military withdraws from anywhere, countries will destabilize and they'll collapse and war will follow.
I think there may be a case to be made for that being in the South China Seas, but I don't think France would be like, well, that's it then. Like, fuck this.
And we're taking Germany.
I don't think that would happen.
I'll tell you who does have a clear plan, though, who is Dylan McDermott, Forbes. He's very clear on why he's double
very
crossed.
Clear. He's very clear.
I can't remember why he's so cross now.
He's anti-globalisation.
Oh, for fuck's sake. He's like, you and you, his, you made globalisation.
His motive, I'll quote him, his motive is globalisation and fucking Wall Street.
Yep. Right, okay.
And that's it. That's enough.
For which Aaron Eckhart is solely responsible.
No,
is
but seriously, if he'd waited 3 years, Trump would have been in the White House. He'd have been fine. He wouldn't be dead. It's all about, he's basically a Trump voter who didn't have anyone to vote for at that point. Because he's like, oh, I want isolationist populist politics. I don't want to be part of this world.
So then have they shied away from him saying, he said globalization because they don't want him to say immigration because you want to still feel something for him? Because what does shouting at someone saying globalization mean for you as a person? Nothing.
I think it does, though. Like, I think it's American jobs for American workers.
He doesn't say that.
But that's what globalization is. It's a banner term in his world. I may be adding too much to Dylan McDermott's character
here. I think you should stop. Because it doesn't mean that to me.
We've got Butler kicking the crap out of everyone now. He takes someone out with a Lincoln bust. I never feel like he's going to lose a fight in this film, which
exactly.
I think is a problem.
It's a problem because he should be rusty. Because he's like, I've been at the Treasury for years and it's killing me and I've got all these things on my belt and I can barely sit down. So shouldn't there be a moment where he's like, I can't quite chop this guy.
Let me take my pager off.
You've got all those moments. I'm going to keep coming back to it, especially in the next section. In Die Hard, when John McClane looks like he's screwed, looks like he's not going to make it, looks like he's going to lose the fight.
Yeah.
It never feels that way in this film. And I think that is a real problem with it.
Yeah.
Kang also, as part of his plan, he wants the Cerberus code. And that is a 3-pronged failsafe. You can abort a nuclear missile in flight, but all 3 people with the codes are needed to do that. But all 3 of those people are in the bunker. Why are all those people in the same building at the same time?
And also, it turns out you only need 2, don't you? When they get the last one, he's just like, beep, bop, bop. Oh, there we go.
Yeah. But what?
You can guess the last one.
Because that upsets the whole purpose. Because the whole thing is, Aaron Eckhart keeps going to his staff, don't die, give them your code, because they will never get mine. They will never get it from me.
He says it multiple times in the film.
Yeah. And the whole start of the movie is them trying to get the kids to go, right, we're going to put a gun to your kid's head so you will give us it. And then they go, actually, now the kid's gone, we'll just work it out. Yeah. It's OBK for, what a guess.
Yeah,
what
and this is a really weird thing for me to say, but the first man, they hold a knife to his throat and he won't tell them the code. And he's like, that was quite a cool scene. Cause it's like, he could say it at any point to save his own life, but he doesn't because of how much he loves the president. And then he's like, tell them, Bob, or whatever he's called. whatever. Then when it's Melissa Leo's turn, bear in mind that someone has nearly had their throat cut. I'm not trying to put gradients of violence on it, but someone slaps her across the face and she's like, can I tell him? And it's like, it's not the same
She does not.
Gets the crap kicked out of her.
Really badly.
And she's holding out and she said, fuck you. Yeah.
I think she does her absolute best with what on paper is her just grunting and just going, no!
I may agree with you on that one. The worst, we'll be saying more about that.
The worst part about the Melissa Leo getting the shit beaten out of her, and it really is awful. It's nasty watching her getting beaten up. And then they drag her back to the president and re-handcuff her next to it.
Yep.
And Aaron Eckhart turns to her, and the first words out of his mouth are, rough day.
But doesn't she say something like,
fuck you as well? Yeah. Rough day, huh? Yes.
Say, like,
did you see?
Or something. But it's so weird because you can't even see her face. And it's like, did the director not want you to be able to see her face because she's trying to hide her face? Because a lot was going on.
Because it's probably a stunt woman being beaten up in that scene rather than Melissa Leo.
I thought it's because the wig was so bad. And God help me if that's her real hair, but.
On the subject of Cerberus, I genuinely think, I know they go, it's a three-pronged thing, the three-headed dog, Cerberus, in Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I swear they only call it Cerberus so that later on, because Cerberus guarded the gates of hell, so that Morgan Freeman can sound cool going, they've just opened the gates of hell.
Literally.
And we can all go, we feel clever now.
I know
what Cerberus is.
I think it's because it's in Harry Potter, though. That's the only reason I knew
We're now in the section that I'm calling Die Hard in the White House, because there are quite a lot of Die Hard moments here. We've got Butler in direct contact with Kang, and he starts winding him up about killing his men, about saving Sparkplug. He says, why don't you and I play a game of fuck off? You go first.
Hangs up.
Yeah, it's those wind-up things that John McClane does to Hans Gruber in Die Hard that enrage him, that are really entertaining to watch, but not as entertaining here as in the other film.
I've got a theory that Gerard Butler is just pretty shit on the phone throughout this movie. That's an example there. It's just a terrible, terrible like gag in itself. Let's play a game of fuck off. You go first. Brrr.
I think it's the funniest thing about life.
No more negotiating with the United People's Front of who gives a fuck.
Love it.
Earlier on, though, he leaves his wife, who's a doctor in the hospital, leaves her a voicemail when she doesn't come to the phone.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of voicemail that if you got, you'd be like,
what the fuck was that?
He literally, I wrote it down. He goes, just checking in. Massive sigh. Listen, I'll call you later. Hangs up.
If you picked up
that message and it was like,
bye.
He follows up, though, because later on, when Morgan Freeman gives him 30 minutes to save the world, the first thing he does is phone his wife, who's working in hospital, so they've got to go and find her. She's busy herself anyway. This is not the first thing you should do.
She's not busy. At the start, the first time when they're strafing Washington, D.C., you have that scene where it's all hell's breaking loose in the hospital and there are literally hundreds of injured people. Mm-hmm. Cuts back when Morgan Freeman's given a speech. Every single member of staff is sitting there in silence watching the speech. You're like, what about all those injured people? It's like president's giving a speech.
But when it's Freeman, you have to stop.
You can't help. It's a reflex action. When Morgan Freeman is president,
is there
you
an
just
asteroid
stop.
Coming? More Die Hard. Dylan McDermott pulls a Hans Gruber by pretending to be on Butler's side while smoking a cigarette.
Quick question. Yeah. Did Kang send Dylan McDermott to kill Mike Banning armed with nothing more than a packet of fags because he doesn't appear to have a weapon? He's like, I'll pretend to be your mate. Now we're fighting. Now I've got to get your gun to kill you. Why have I not got a weapon, boss? Why have I just got my trusty packet of fags?
Yeah.
Good point.
That I was smoking with Kang. How do you know his name? Oh, fuck! Oh, I've done
Silly
it now.
Me.
I've done it now.
Like in Die Hard, they send in the SEAL team. That's the SWAT team in Die Hard. And like in Die Hard, the terrorists have anti-tank missiles they fire at the SWAT team. Here, the terrorists have Hydra 6 that they fire at the SEAL team, which is a brutal piece of technology, but Butler has a rocket launch to fight back, but that is the same scene. And then more Die Hard. The military want Butler to stand down, remove him as their eyes and ears, but Butler argues back and says no. They claim he's getting hostages killed, just like the LAPD chief claims that McClane got Ellis killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same story beats, just not quite as good. But yeah, Butler, again on the phone, as you like him, Alex, he says to Kang, save the last bullet for yourself, because if you don't, I'm going to stick my knife through your brain. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's going to come back.
Yeah, I enjoyed the phone call he has with his wife when he calls her in the hospital.
Yeah.
Not only because I genuinely think his wife is a terrible doctor, not only does she stop treating people when Morgan Freeman's on the TV, but she's standing over someone in a hospital bed with a syringe ready to inject them with morphine. Mm. And someone walks in and goes, it's the phone, it's a special phone, it's your husband. And rather than go, I'll be a sec, and inject the person, she puts the lid back on the syringe and goes to someone else, make sure he gets some morphine, and walks off to take the phone call. And then Gerald Butler lives up to his reputation of being terrible on the phone in this movie, because he goes, I love you, doesn't wait for a reply, just hangs up the phone. Yeah. It's not the same as the fuck you gag. It's not the same as the fuck off gag. You've got to wait for her to reply.
Well, maybe it's showing some... it doesn't, but maybe it's showing some vulnerability, because maybe he thinks that their relationship isn't on equal footing, and maybe she doesn't love him, so he hangs up before she can say, oh, yeah, me too.
Or maybe he's so arrogant he goes, don't need to hear it.
Don't care.
See ya. Yeah. Stick a knife in your brain.
So now Kang fakes his and President Eckhart's death by blowing up terrorists and hostages in a chopper, but they're really alive. And then we're in the home straight, which I'm calling The Butler Does It. They activate Cerberus.
Come on.
They activate Cerberus, which means they're detonating missiles inside silos in America, turning the country into a nuclear wasteland so America will know suffering and famine. As Alex says, they've opened the gates of hell. So we've got a lot of scenes here now in the crisis room repeating what we've just been told or what we've just seen on the telly, like some pointless Greek chorus.
The best part is that not only does one person say it and then they say it in the crisis room, someone then comes in and goes, NORAD agree. It's like there are three versions of the same sentence. They always go, and NORAD can confirm. It's like, no one cares.
And then President Eckhart, we've set him up as a boxer. He finally gets to fight, and that lasts for about 20 seconds until he gets shot.
Yes.
It's a little bit disappointing, I think, when we know he's President Badass. Mm-hmm. And obviously in the sequels, he gets to fight a bit more. But here...
Sequel. Yeah, he dips out.
He dips out.
Before Angel.
It was a smart move.
Yeah.
And then Butler breaks Kang's neck and then, as promised, stabs him in the brain.
He does.
And then through his inability to do hashtags, he nearly...
I can't believe this scene. I can't believe it.
Incredible.
I can't believe no one went.
So he's typing in deactivation codes and he can't do a hashtag and someone has to tell him how to do it. I can't believe it's in the film.
It sounds silly when you say it like that. But wait, it was so tense. Even if he knew how to do a hashtag, it would still be boring and stupid.
It's a Mel Brooks scene in entirety. Yeah. It's the scene from Spaceballs where they go 1-1-1-2-2-2-3-3-3-4-4. That's the kind of combination an idiot would have on his luggage. That's the combination I have on my luggage. It's seriously ridiculous. What's even more ridiculous than just the length of the code, the repetition, and the hashtag is that at the very end, when he's putting the code, Cerberus is a machine that when you have deactivated it, will count down 4 further seconds.
It just fucks with you.
Before stopping.
What sort of machine does that?
So in Cerberus's world, 4 on its countdown is actually 1.
Yeah.
Who builds a machine like that, that controls the nuclear weapons, that when you deactivate it goes, I'm going to count down a further 4 seconds and then turn off.
They don't even use the opportunity to go, we want that extra little hiccup, that slight, you know, the other thing. But it's not that Gerard Butler's not put the fucking hashtag in or whatever. And he goes, oh shit, sorry. And then whatever.
But that's the gag. That's the gag that they should have. He should be watching the machine, still counting down, having put in the code. And Angela Bassett should go, have you pressed enter? He's like,
perfect.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you stop it. Not just a machine, some sort of sentient fucking machine that goes, this'll be funny. 3, 2. No, you did deactivate me. You did. I'm messing.
They drag out the ending a bit here, and I do remember in the cinema, this clearing the cinema quite quickly. Now, I think there are some issues with this film.
Do you?
Casual xenophobia, it's sort of this right-wing wet dream. You've got the president doing a speech about the villain, saying they came to desecrate our way of life, to foul our belief, to trample our freedom. I wonder what he's talking about there, what the filmmakers are talking about there.
Terrorists!
And then the flag is raised as they rise renewed. I think people were leaving the cinema in London at that point, murmuring. And then, may God bless you, may God bless United States of America. People were definitely running to get out of the cinema by that point.
Yeah.
And by the time we realised that Butler's back on the presidential detail and the stirring music's playing, I'm pretty sure I was the only person in the cinema at that point.
Until the very end of the credits, as is his way.
That's right. I forgot, because of respect for
respect.
The film.
It's
Is the key grip on this movie? I must know for Tilly trivia.
And that's it. So I don't have a lot more about this film, apart from the huge cost to multinational companies. It cost them millions and had them changing their guidelines.
Really?
Yeah, in quite a funny way. The FCC issued a $1.9 million fine against Viacom, NBC Universal and ESPN for their promotion of the film. Because in the trailers, they used the two-tone emergency alert signal that gets played in America when there is an emergency happening.
Right.
And it aired several times on Comedy Channel and people were upset. People wrote into complaints saying, this is misleading, and had our entire family running to the TV to find out what was going on, so only to find out it was a commercial.
Who runs to a telly? What's the point? Like,
when that alarm happens, it's you've got to run.
You've got to run to the telly. Yeah.
Well, the telly's not going to run to you.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought you meant they were watching it and then the alarm goes off and they just stood closer to the telly to see what would happen.
Not everyone lives in front of their TV. These people were doing other things. The TV was on. It was background
noise.
Well,
it's respect. When I'm watching the telly, I'm watching the telly.
So they got in trouble for frivolous, casual use of the emergency alert tone for reasons other than their defined purpose, because it can desensitize viewers to the tones and thereby undermine the effectiveness of the system in the event of an actual emergency.
Yeah.
And all those companies have had to revise their guidelines in order to ban material that uses those alert tones, and they paid the $2 million.
They knew they were going to get in trouble. They just thought, well, fuck it, it's worth it. Well, oh, yeah, all right, we'll revise our guidelines.
Do you think? I don't think they did.
I didn't really.
I don't think it was worth it.
It would be funny if something terrible was going to happen and people's TVs were making it sound and people were like, it's the Olympus Has Fallen sequel. Stay where you are. Don't do anything. It's Gerard Butler's new movie. Don't move. Nobody move. Do not run to the TV. I'm not being fooled again.
I've genuinely got sod all else. So should we do the bits?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Favourite scene, Victoria?
It's the moment it all kicks off. It stands apart from the rest of the film in how expertly and subtly and powerfully it is directed and edited. So that is so pedestrian, but Aaron Eckhart talking to the South Korean president and the music drops out and they just whisk him out of there.
Alex?
Yeah, I disagree with how sort of subtle it is. It's a fucking plane blowing the shit out of Washington, D.C. But that's the bit that I like in the opening. I just think it's such an audacious opening. It's so ridiculous, so over the top, so difficult to believe, and yet it works, and it's amazing. Just the fact that you're watching a plane fly over the American Capitol blowing the crap out of stuff is one of those, like, fucking hell, they've really gone there moments. So I love it.
I was going to say that as well, but I'm going to be different so we don't. Also, the same thing. I like the president's wife being killed. No. I think it really grabs you by the balls while at the same time...
I don't know that a woman dying and you being grabbed by the balls should ever be in the same sentence.
I didn't enjoy it.
Right.
It makes you feel genuine sympathy for the two leads as well. So I think
that's
it does
what,
a good job.
Yeah, fridge a woman to create a character for a man.
That's all I want.
Right.
That's all I'm after. That's all I'm after. And
is that a term? I'm learning a term here. What's fridge a woman means?
Fridging is when you kill the female character.
Right.
Often a wife or girlfriend or partner.
Oh, that's why I don't know it.
Are you minding me up?
No, go on. I am genuinely
so
interested.
She's either already dead because, and all that is there for is to give the man pain or a character arc or whatever. Or she gets killed very, very quickly. So it's called fridging because you often have a scene where she's in a fridge because so she's been killed.
How many movies are there with women who are dead who are also in a fridge?
Well, it's not. It's not they're all in fridges. It's just the person that came up with the term was using that as an illustration, as a visual example of what commonly happens.
But can you think of an actual example of where...
I can think of a lot of telly where it happens. I can't think of a lot of films where it happens. But it happens a lot.
Do you remember William the Refrigerator Perry?
No.
He was the big American football guy who played for the Chicago Bears when we were kids.
Okay.
And they called him the Refrigerator because he was the size of a fridge and full of food.
And women.
What?
I thought you were going to
say that.
I thought you were going to tell some horrible story about he was an American football player and then they found all those bodies in his fridge.
He's still alive, it could be. Right. Maybe someone should check on him.
The other good scene that I will say is really good in this is the fact that this is how you do a kid in a movie like this.
Oh, he's really good.
But you don't want a kid in a movie like this because they're like a weight around your hero's neck. It limits what they can do. It all becomes very child-friendly. And I love the fact that the kid turns up and then they get rid of the kid.
They just throw him up a chimney.
inside like 5 minutes. It's like, oh, is this kid going to be around? No, he's gone. Yeah. He's off.
Spark plug is out.
Spark plug. And do you know my hatred comes from The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2, where the kid in that kills what at this point is supposed to be the scariest dinosaur that we've seen ever in film, a velociraptor. She kills it with gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was like, get kids out of these movies.
MVW, Alex.
MVW. I sort of struggled with this one, weirdly, because there isn't really a lot to consider. But it is Gerard Butler. I do think he is an immensely watchable actor. And I have watched and enjoyed more bad films because of him than any other actor. Geostorm, Hunter Killer, or the 2001 TV series Attila, in which he played Attila the Hun alongside Theodosius, played by Tim Curry. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thanks. Vicky, not a fan of that.
I'm doing these this week for our two episodes based on who I fancy the most because I want to. And so my MVW is Rick Yoon because he's the hottest guy there. So that's the reason.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm messing this one up as well this week.
And that's my real reason.
Yeah. Yep. I'm messing this up one as well.
Are you?
Easy for
you're
me
messing
to
this one up.
I just did.
One. Oh, shit.
MVW comes from MVP, which is a sporting analogy. And so I'm going to talk about an unused MVW, a sub who is barely used, who's kind of benched for this film. They kick the shit out of Melissa Leo in this movie. They strip her of her clothes. They strip her of her dignity. She's fully committed. And I love it when she says, fuck you to Kang. But watching it this time left a really nasty taste in my mouth. Melissa Leo does a lot with a little, but she deserves better. Don't bench Melissa Leo, as she could and should have been this film's lethal weapon.
Yes, she should have been Morgan Freeman.
So Melissa Leo, I love that actress. Right, and what would you change, Vicky?
So you may be able to guess what I'm about to say, but when he's putting the code into the computer and being told the numbers to put in, he has to do it his way and save the day and shake off the past. So the only way I can think that he would do that is he either cuts the computer out of a seatbelt or he stabs it in the head. But that's as much as I can.
Didn't spend a lot of time on that one, did you?
Are you not taking these movies seriously this week, Victoria?
It's whoever you fancy, and he's got to stab the computer.
Yeah, or cut it out of a car. Yeah.
So Cerberus.
To shake off the past.
Cerberus is strapped into the back of a limo.
You've already established that it's sentient,
in the
so
bunker.
It's alive.
Yeah, why
and it's
not?
Like, save me, Gerard Butler. And he's like, I can't, because the last time I did this, it didn't go well. You can do it. And then he does. And then he saves the day.
Right.
Alex,
I got a better one.
Good.
Unsurprisingly.
No.
Well, I've got two. First of all, I think Gerard Butler's wife should be around the White House earlier. I think there's an untapped resource of melodrama in her knowing that he's in the White House and his life is at risk. And I think that phone call that they have, she should go, I know where you are. I know you're in the White House. I've been told, can you not do this? Can you come home? I want to go on holiday, the honeymoon we never had.
Oh, he's God, like, that holiday thing. Let me just say this. Only in films do people say, should we go on holiday? And someone goes, oh, I'm not sure. And they go, you, me, a beach. And it's like, no one's ever. Have you ever pitched a holiday to your partner by describing who will literally be there? No. Oh, is it just me and you? Oh, fuck, all right. Well, then I'm interested.
You, me, your friend Lynn, a beach. What?
What's that?
What's this about Lynn? Because I don't know where she was yesterday. Where were you? The other thing, and it's a bit like what you're saying, Victoria. I think there should be a change, but I think the arc isn't Gerard Butler's, and I don't think he should stab a computer in the head or release it from a seatbelt that it's trapped in a limo wearing. I think it should be, I cannot believe it's not Aaron Eckhart who doesn't kill Kang. Like, that should be his kill. He's been in the bunker, tormented by him, watched him threaten his staff, watched him beat up Melissa Leo, and it should be him, sort of. It should be a boxing reference. He loses to Gerard Butler at the start, but in the end, he saves Gerard Butler because while Gerard Butler is being attacked by Kang, he just steps up and bang, Kang, gone.
Yep.
And you know, because Gerard Butler was a producer, he probably went, yeah, that's not happening, though. That's not happening because I'll be killing Kang.
Another connection, both films where the star is also a producer. Because Channing Tatum produced White House Down as well.
Oh.
You're talking about shaking off the past, Vicky, with your change. I'm the same. This film starts with Butler kind of letting the president's wife go, potentially, to save the president. Right decision professionally, maybe not the right decision for him as a man, maybe not morally. Let's have him have to make a similar decision at the end of the film, having to choose between the president and his son.
Oh, okay.
And this time he goes with his heart rather than his head and he saves the kid. The president dies, but Butler's soul is restored.
Okay.
pretty depressing.
So now you like cutting a computer out of a car, don't you?
Yeah, I think that might be better.
Welcome back.
No. Yeah. You kill the president.
You stab a computer in the head, Chris.
You kill Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah. I know. I'm a fan of Vicky's now. It's suddenly got a little bit nicer. Right then, shall we do a quiz, Chris?
Sure.
Great.
Again, I've got, like last week, with witches as an overarching thing, I've gone overarching thing, this is a presidential quiz.
Okay.
So.
The mogul. The renegade. Renegade.
Question one. Who played the president in Machete Kills? And I'm going to give you...
Martin Sheen.
Three options.
No, I mean,
was that your answer?
That was my...
excellent.
Is it right?
No,
yeah. Martin Sheen.
Charlie Sheen.
All right.
Kevin Spacey or Mel Gibson?
Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen.
Well, Vicky gets a point. I don't know if you do, Alex, because you went in there with.
I actually got a Sheen though. That's not bad.
He's actually credited as Carlos Estevez, which is his real name.
Yeah. Doesn't mind it when Robert Rodriguez does it, but he doesn't like it when Chuck Lorre does it.
What is the name of the movie where Ronald Reagan stars opposite a chimpanzee? Is it Breakfast for Bonzo, Bath Time for Bonzo, or Bedtime for Bonzo?
Bedtime for Bonzo.
I think it's Bedtime for Bonzo as well.
Correct. Point each. Which handsome actor plays the president in Spy Kids 3? Is it Pierce Brosnan, Brad Pitt, or George Clooney?
I think it's Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, so do I.
Incorrect. Oh. It is George Clooney.
Is he really?
Not known. Did George Clooney really voice the dog in the very first episode of South Park?
Yeah, he was involved. Yeah, he's the one that gave the videos around to everyone in Hollywood that got them their
fine.
Their first gig.
Sounds like a great guy. I once interviewed him for, unfortunately, a terrible movie, The Monuments Men. Did you ever see that?
I haven't seen it.
Very disappointing. Very disappointing.
Very, very boring. Yeah. Very boring film. However, when he came in, and it was the first time I'd interviewed him, he is proper old school Hollywood glamour. He comes in and just takes the scarf off and just sort of tosses it. Black scarf, black suit, tosses it on the table in front of me and sits down. And I'm like,
yeah,
he's my Rick Yoon.
Which actor is president in the Simpsons movie? Is it Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, or Bruce Willis?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Correct.
Because that was the big thing about the Simpsons movie and how they bottled it. They bottled it in the Simpsons movie and made it President McBain.
Oh, yeah.
Or was it the other way around? I can't remember.
Which president played himself in the 1996 Sinbad comedy First Kid? Was it Bill Clinton, George Bush, or George W. Bush?
So at the time, it must have been...
He might not have been president at the time.
Oh.
What was the year?
1996.
George Bush Sr.
I'm going with Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. two left. Which actress was John Hinckley trying to impress when he shot US President Ronald Reagan?
Jodie Foster.
Yeah, I mean, you should wait for the question.
Sorry.
let me hear the options.
Farrah Fawcett, Faye Dunaway, or Jodie Foster?
Jodie Foster.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but thank you.
Okay. That's annoying.
Okay, final question. Final question. You need this, Vicky. What did Donald Trump call an incredible, fantastic movie in 1997, revealing that it plays in regular rotation on his private jet? Was it JFK? Was it Bloodsport? Or was it Short Circuit?
Oh my God, I'm just going to say Short Circuit because that might be something that me and him can agree on.
It is Short Circuit.
Is it?
The film that he said is an incredible, fantastic movie is Bloodsport,
really?
Starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he plays it all the time.
Does he?
That's nice. Alex, you're the winner!
Yay! Right then, time now. Obviously, we're back on Thursday to deal with the challenger of this movie, White House Down. It'll be a very similar sounding show. But looking ahead to next week, Chris, it's your choices next week. It's been a while since it's been your choices, so what are we going for?
You both got the Monuments Men.
Give us a clue.
I'll give you a clue. The clue is L.A. Neo-Noir.
L.A. Neo-Noir. All right, love it. L.A. Neo-Noir. That is the clue for next week's pairing. And we'll be back, like I said, on Thursday to talk through White House Down. Thank you for listening. Again, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at ClashPod. You can email show@clashpod.com or you can, well, you just cannot, or if you can do it as well, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, or other. It's very much appreciated. Back on Thursday for some White House Down action. Bye bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.